Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Fiction. Science fiction. Horror. Fantasy. Crime. LGBT.
You have now entered the...
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip? elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on
KCPE 106.5 FM Los Angeles, 102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery. I'm Al Warren. Mr. Michael Hawley is in the house.
Greetings, Al. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Greetings. So you got like lots of white stuff out there?
We 2.5 feet of snow where I'm at, so that was kind of in the middle. So lots of snow, and we need it because our Buffalo Bills just got beaten. We're kind of bummed here. We're sulking. So,
well, what did you expect? Come on, you know that's the way it goes. And
to win?
Well, no, that's don't ask for that much, you know.
Okay, that's right.
Pushing it, okay. Well, it's you should be good to know the cold spell's over in the west, so it's warming up. It's rain already, so that should be heading your way.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I just turn a switch and it happens.
Great, great.
It's that easy. Yeah, you know, that's the conspiracy. You know, you can control the weather. Well, speaking of that, we're we have an author today, and we're going to be talking about all sorts of things. Now, this is an espionage sort of spy thriller, so it's called A Fifth of the Story, and this is Dr. Catherine Hutchison Hayes joining us. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, it's an absolute honor. I'm glad to be here. I'm sorry you're suffering in the snow. It is a really wicked cold, 55 degrees here today. Sorry. Oh.
Thank you, Kevin.
In Florida.
Well,
oh, yes.
There you go. You know,
and that's where all the snowbirds go in this month and next month. So we'll be seeing you.
Yeah, I see the meme of someone builds a snowman and he's got a little sign and he's holding a thumb out, right? Because he's got a fake hand with a thumb and it's like Florida is on his sign.
Oh, yeah.
He's hitchhiking. Well, so listen, what can I say? So Catherine, you've got this book coming out February 27th, mm-hmm. And what led you to write a book about this sort of feel? You know, we're talking about thriller and conspiracy and all that sort of stuff. So what brought you down into that road?
Yeah, so I would have to say it would be my mentor. His name is Cecil Murphy, and originally, I had the same title, but I had a completely different book. It was 90,000 words of a book around the same premise. And the premise is that there are five sides to each story. There's one, there's your side, there's my side, there's what other people see, they're the facts. And then the other part is there what God sees and what he thinks and what he believes. And if we live for that one-fifth, what God sees and what he believes, we'll live a good life. That's the premise. But then I have all kinds of things happening around it, and it had to do with law enforcement. And my mentor at the time, who was helping me edit the book, asked me, why are you writing this particular book? And he's asking me, what did I do? What did my husband do? And he said, I don't understand why you're writing this particular book. It just seems like you have the background to write a book where you are shedding light on some of the intelligence agencies that you're privy to. And it just opened up a whole new world to me. And I literally wrote a book on the fly in 10 months. Now, to some people, that may not be a lot of time, or it may be a lot of time. I'm not sure, depending on how fast they write or how slow. But it included all the research, all the interviews for my husband and the people that he works with. to dig deep and to create this story.
So you had to learn yourself about some of the agencies like CIA and intelligence and stuff. And I guess, so your husband was part of that, right?
He was more DIA. So it's like the CIA of the military.
So you kind of got a lot of firsthand information from that. Did you have a point to it, Bud? Like, so you're writing this, and you sort of said why you're writing it, but when you write the story itself, there's got to be a certain amount of entertainment, of course, and excitement and thrill and all that stuff in the book for people to get into. But was there a meaning to it, a subtext?
Yes. So my concern is our democracy in the United States. And I've been just watching what's been happening in terms of the intelligence agencies and a lot of these breaches. And so my story began with what if someone or people at the very highest level of our intelligence agency who's supposed to be protecting our country flipped? What if they flipped against us and shook the foundation of what our country's built on? And then I began delving into a lot of these organizations that we do have right now in our country, which is terrifying, about, you know, taking down our government and all of that, and how they're so intent on doing this. And I created a fake organization that infiltrated the highest intelligence agencies. But this what if is very much based on things that have already taken place and are currently taking place in our country, which is terrifying.
A question. Your protagonist is Brock?
Yeah, Brock O'Reilly.
And CIA. Now, I'm a retired Navy commander, so I've been in trouble by all these organizations, and I've been in jail. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say too much? No, but I actually am. But what? So I know DIA a little bit, but the CIA, FBI, like an umbrella look is more the local, you know, in the United States, and CIA is outside the United States.
Right.
So what you're doing is you're connecting the two?
Yeah. So it starts off with these three friends who all work for the CIA, and they're kind of operators, and something goes horribly wrong. And when they come back stateside, their director asks them to consider transferring to the FBI for special mission. So, okay. So that actually is not uncommon, even though intelligence agencies, for some reason, sometimes don't always play well together. For some reason, you know, there's disconnect between a lot of the groups. They like hoard their information, and they're kind of funny because they have their own rules and things like that. But that's where the story unfolds about they're upset about moving from the CIA to the FBI, because it's this feeling of being like you're larger than life when you're in the CIA, because they're out, like you said before, they're outside of the United States. When you're in the CIA, you're more going out to make sure what could possibly be a breach that could harm Americans. So you're looking to protect American freedom outside of American soil, and FBI, you're strictly here on U.S. soil.
How do you create a character like Brock? Like, for you yourself, where does Brock come from, and what kind of relationship do you have with your character?
So I have a dangerously intimate relationship with my character.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I'll be at a restaurant and I'll say to my family, oh my gosh, Brock would love this steak. He loves his steak done like this. And my family's like, look, are you talking about one of your book characters? Please don't. But they've even gotten to know my characters. You know, they could sense if something's off. Like I've read them passages about one particular character, and they're like, oh, that doesn't sound like something Shugs would say, or that doesn't sound like this particular character. But for Brock, how I got to know him is I actually sit down and create a character sketch. Like I, I know his likes, his dislikes. I know his background. I know intimate details about him so that my writing about him is organic. And when he reacts to a certain situation, he's reacting naturally because I've already built on this foundation that, you know, Brock, he doesn't, you know, maybe he's just an only child. Brock is his mother suffering with, you know, early onset dementia. Brock's father is such and such. So all of these things play into who he is. And so I know my characters intimately, even to how they, yeah.
Well, do you hear your character? Like, how about the dialogue? Are you, is it like watching a movie for you, or do you actually hear Brock, for instance?
It is like a movie playing in my mind, how he speaks, his voice, what he would say. There's certain things I know that he would say or he wouldn't say, that kind of thing.
Well, they're not letting you drive then when you're hearing the voices and seeing things, right? I mean, you know, there's nothing like that going on. I hope they're not letting you drive.
No.
Could you imagine? You know, you get in the car and then you just sort of like hear voices, and then you come out of the car at the mall and you're like, why am I at the mall?
So because your husband is kind of connected as... Do you ever tell your husband, well, Brock wouldn't do it that way. Well, Brock wouldn't do it this way. Are you getting yourself in trouble?
Yes, I get myself into trouble all the time. And but he was really fantastic at that in terms of being one of my sensitivity readers. And that's sort of a new buzzword for people. We mostly think about it in terms of if you're writing outside of your culture and race, you would want to get a sensitivity reader, but getting a sensitivity reader to make sure your material is vetted by a professional for something that you are not an expert of is also a great idea. So he would peruse my manuscript to go over a certain aspect of it and say, no, that wouldn't happen at all. That's not how we talk. Or, you know, I had them hugging it out all the time. And my husband's like, no, guys are not going to hug it out. There's punch each other or, you know, insult each other, but they're not going to hug it out. And these guys that you're referring to here who are military guys, they don't talk like that. Or this intelligence agency, these are the acronyms you use, that these are correct. So he was very helpful that way.
Well, so when you talk about sensitivity, then do you think about the violence that you put in and how you write the action scenes or the crimes, for instance?
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been told that I don't write like a girl, which I don't know how to take that, but, but I guess I'm really not a chick flick kind of a person. I'm more your action, thriller kind of person. I'll be the one girl in the movie theater with all the guys, you know. So I try to write true to form, not to just have gratuitous violence for no reason. It's true to the place and time. And for instance, the book opens up in a place where lots of extremism is happening in outside of our country. And it's violent, but it's something that's realistic. There are things that have actually happened that have been described to me by my husband. And in fact, I think I downplay quite a bit of some of the scenes, not to go overboard. I didn't want to glorify the violence, but I also, there's something that needs to be said about the reality of the little wars that we fight outside of the states, that, you know, people say freedom isn't free, but I don't know that they often understand what that entails. Like, how many people's lives are put in harm's way? How many people die? Civilian, you know, contractor, military, CIA, what have you. They die for our freedoms a lot. And the battlefield is quite violent, and there are many freedoms and privileges that we often take for granted here in the United States. So it's not gratuitous.
Okay, good. Yeah, and it's true. But so when you're in those scenes, there's always a bad guy, so to speak, someone of evil nature and stuff. So do you find it difficult to get into the headset of the bad character, so to speak, and write their dialogue and write their behaviors?
No, because I am a trained black belt in Taekwondo. And in Taekwondo, we are trained to consistently see danger all around us. We're consistently trained to, and this is not like a saying that Taekwondo is just constantly looking for bad people or bad things, but it helps. It's actually a blessing. It helps put you in the mindset of possible evil everywhere. So even if I come out of my car and I'm going into an elevator, if I don't have a weapon on me, I don't have mace, I have my keys positioned in such a way, and I'm looking at everybody in the elevator. I'm saying, if this person tries to attack me, I'm going to do this. And I'm constantly thinking of who could attack me, how I'm going to defend myself. And so you think worst case scenario. So it makes you get into the head of the bad guy. Just like if you're in a Taekwondo fight, if you're in a battle, you have to put yourself into the head of someone who could possibly be trying to kill you. What are they thinking? How are they trying to come at you? Why? Why are they so desperate? And so you have to kind of take on that persona in order to defend yourself.
So expect the unexpected.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So in this particular story, did you have your characters, your main characters first? Were they what you came up with and then you put them into the situation? Or did you have this situation kind of, you know, this scenario planned out and then you created characters to go into it?
No, I knew my characters first. I had my three main characters first. And then I had an idea of the situation. And then everything came after. And then there were some characters later that became louder and louder. And they became so centralized that they are now the star of my next book. So that was interesting.
So now these characters are telling you what to do. You know, not only are they telling you how to drive, but then they're telling you what to do.
Oh.
Wow. Okay. So, yeah. Can we make sure your husband's still okay and alive? You know, just have him come on camera and he can nod yes. If he needs help, just put up a finger. And
you don't have a freezer in the basement, do you?
Yeah.
No, I don't even have a basement. No.
There you go.
It's all filled in, you know. Yeah. Oh, it's terrible. Well, so you said you've already got like a kind of, so I guess that's kind of what's coming up next. You've kind of already got a sequel. Did that just come naturally, or did it build out of these characters that became strong?
It built on these. It was completely different from what I planned. I'd actually started on the next book, which would have taken up exactly where I left off from a fifth of the story and went right into the next scene about what was going to happen to that set of characters. But there was a character that became so interesting and she wanted to be heard that I had to tell her story. And so that's what ended up happening. So that other story is still on the back burner. It will have to wait.
Well, are you creating a series Bible then too? Are you going to have like a little book that you keep track of everyone and the things that kind of they go through and who they are and what all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I have hundreds and hundreds of pages of backstory, of facts, of research. And I actually have in the works five books, you know, so a fifth of the story. I feel like it'll be really wrapped up if I do all five books.
You're going to town here. So now your setting, do you write the setting that where they're doing these things? Do you make that a character itself too?
Yeah, that almost becomes a character itself. That's such a great question. It takes place where a lot of our intel hangs out, you know, that whole Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland area. And the time of the year and the season where it's written, it's really dreary. And so you get a lot of the rain and it has become its own character, the setting.
Now, at the end of the book, like when you go through this, you said 10 months. So the whole experience of putting it together and checking and writing and doing all that stuff and that, you kind of live through your characters, as you say too, when you're writing it. So the things they're going through, you go through and you feel and all that and the tension and all that stuff. How do you think something like that changes you?
Yeah, another wonderful question. You know, tragically, writing this book, I had two horrible things happen. My brother, who's very close in age to me, and we're very close as siblings, he died suddenly. He died suddenly of a heart attack. And that completely unexpected. Yeah. And actually, one of the characters in my book is loosely based on him. And he knew it. He just loved that. He just couldn't wait to see it come out. And then 8 weeks later, my mother died of COVID. And it was such an unreal time for me. It was such a time of heartbreak. But I really learned to really become an author who was dedicated to the process no matter what happened. And the night my mother passed, I poured myself into that book. I think I wrote the best chapter in that entire book, and it's all in there. So I can tell, they wouldn't be able to tell, oh, her mother died, but it's so laden with rich emotion. I didn't want to waste any of that, and I poured it into that novel and into that particular chapter.
What do you hope the reader gets out of it?
I'm hoping that the reader, what they will get out of it is that they will see how important it is to have rich relationships, to be loyal, to be authentic and transparent. And also, it also speaks about division, and it speaks about sometimes the lack of unity that we can have in relationships in our country and our government and all of that. And it talks about racism, all the isms. And I'm hoping that someone can walk away from it feeling that there's hope, that if I follow through and if I continue to be like, I look at Brock and he's like the great friend. If I can be more like Brock, if I can be more like so-and-so in my book, I can possibly live a better life. With all the odds they had stacked against them, I can live a better life.
Catherine, question. You talked about extremist organizations. Do you get into the mind of an extremist to try to get your readers to kind of almost understand where they're coming from?
I do. And that's pretty scary, but...
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's pretty terrifying, but I went back to even looking at cults and looking at how cults are built, looking back at people like Hitler, just looking to seeing the most extreme organizations and things that were built on heinous hate. And how did they get people to, you know, to sign up for the things that they signed up for? But these people were charismatic. They drew in people who were suffering. They identified with them. They were on the ground with them. And so they were endearing characteristics about many of these people that we look at as wicked and heinous for starting some of these movements and organizations. But there's still something endearing about them, and you still give them. If I'm building this pretend organization or this villain, I have to still make my villain likable, and they have to have characteristics about them that you can identify with and you can understand. And so for one of my villains, you can see why maybe he would gravitate to the organization that he gravitated to. And you begin to see why people could start to buy into an extremist set of thinking in an organization.
So like why people drink the Kool-Aid in like Jonestown.
Yes, it's exactly. Yes, that's it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's an interesting area how people get so involved and wrapped up in stuff, and in their world they believe something. Were you sort of a little bit hesitant, or did it sort of make you think when you were writing this that you wanted to be somewhat cautious, being that it's such a, heightened time in America, you know, with things like this going on?
Yeah, and so I never want to be divisive. I always want to come and present a unifying factor and say, I wanted people to look and see, look, hate is never going to win. Division is never going to win. Let's look at the things that we're doing and let's see if we can bring it back around for our betterment. So it can be dangerous. You just don't want to get, you don't want to get to the point where someone feels like you're picking a side or you're being too political or something to that effect. But at some point, if you want to make a statement, you do have to pick sides. You have to err on the side of good or evil.
Right, of course. And I think that's it. It's not even picking a side. It's just doing the right thing, you know, saying the right thing. It just, you know, choices are that way, you know. Well, it's interesting. So what brought you into the writing world? This is your first book, I believe, right?
This is my third book. My first book was a self-help Christian living Bible study book called God's Little Black Dress for Women, How to Put on the Full Armor of God Without Losing Your Femininity. And then my second book is a collaboration with other writers. I was the editor on that book. It's called Focus, 45 Devotionals to Keep Jesus in the Picture. That was just released in December 14th. So this would be my third book, but this is my first thriller.
Is there something you always wanted to do, you think, was be kind of a writer in the fictional?
I always had it in the back of my head to be a writer, but I started out in education. I was a principal for years, and I got very sick. And then after that, my husband had to be deployed, and then we had to move to a base. So during that time, I had to leave my job, and instead of taking a new principalship, my husband, he said, well, why don't you take this time to explore writing? You've always loved to write. I wrote a column for a magazine. I was one of their associate editors. And he said, why don't you just explore writing? I know how much you love writing. One thing led to another. I began doing some writing here and there. And every year I kept on building on it. But it hasn't been until, I would say, the last 5 to 7 years where I got very serious, began taking in a lot of conferences. I also began teaching at conferences because I had this educator background and that came natural to me. I began speaking. I began doing lots of editing, lots of guest magazine writing. So my magazine writing really took off. And then I just decided to definitely pursue the, you know, authoring a book.
What makes a good book for you when you're reading it?
Well, if it's fiction and if it's thriller, which is my favorite, it's got to be the kind of book that keeps me up at night where, you know, I'm doing dumb stuff. Like, you know, I turn on the flashlight app on my phone and I'm reading it at night, getting in trouble with my husband. That's a sign of great fiction. So it's at the end of every chapter, like, I can't wait to find out what's going to happen next. And I'm really invested in the characters. I think about the characters there. I think about how well written. I'm always looking for plot holes, but if I can't find any, that's intriguing to me. And then for nonfiction, nonfiction to me as well is very much the same way. I feel like good nonfiction needs to tell a story and needs to captivate the audience and hook me.
And so what do you think is the biggest challenge about writing a book like this?
So for writing a thriller, it's to keep the momentum. I wrote some beautiful chapters. They were really wonderful. But in reflecting, going back to, and looking at them and working with my editor, I had to agree that they didn't progress the story. They were well written. They were beautiful. They told a lot about my characters, but they didn't progress the story. I could possibly lose my reader. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted my reader to skip meals, call in sick for work, all of that stuff. So I had to make sure that it was action-packed and it was well thought out and that even my subplots would work out. And then there's a lot of moving parts, even when we were talking about the action, like even fight scenes, like you have to make sure that those make sense. The place and time makes sense, that you're not creating a new personality for your character, that they are consistent to who they're supposed to be. So all of those things have to be done artfully. And I think it's a lot harder than we realize until we actually start doing it.
So your antagonist is basically sometimes wins the battle in the story, that they have to go through those trials.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. In my story, it looks like it's hopeless. It looks like my antagonist is going to completely win.
Oh, you should have an alternative ending where they do. Well, you know, this action thriller genre has been real popular lately. Do you have a favorite yourself, or any of the action shows or writers that you really get into?
Writers that I get into? I love, there's an author called Kirsten Moglen. I've met her a couple of times at Killer Nashville. She is just a phenomenal writer. She's indie published, but she does it really well. She's won a number of awards and she writes really fast, but really well. Another author I absolutely love is Diane Mills. She's the queen of romantic suspense. Lynette Eason. I'm also a Stephen King lover. I'm a James Patterson lover. I love Ted Decker. There's so many that there's Stephen James. He's one of my favorites. I just picked up his book Synopsis. It's really incredible. It makes you really think about AI and thrillers. Oh, that's a whole different level.
I guess another thing to think about, you've got to keep things fresh as you go throughout the story. Like you said, keep it going and keep building. You think you can do that with five books?
I can, because I have to tell myself to stop writing. You see, like even my second book, I wrote so much, I'm now in the process of cutting it down by like 10,000 words. You become so invested in these characters and in the story that the story becomes addictive. And I constantly talk about, like, I miss right now that I'm in the editing stage, I really miss writing about my characters, because it's a way of me being with them. I'm hanging out with my favorite peeps, even the bad guys. I started to like them, even with their bad.
Ah, so there's a little bit of evilness in you, I see.
Well, no, isn't it true? But I mean, with your bad characters, your evil characters, the ones that are doing things that are not right, if you explain them enough, if you flesh out that character enough, a lot of times you learn why they do the things they do, or what is it that they see, how they see the world.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And it actually is healthy in a way, because it opens your mind up to have empathy for other people and see how they got where they are, that it's not by accident. It's by what the kinds of things they started believing, watching, people they started hanging out with. And that's why it's so important for you to guard all of those things. You're what you listen to, who you hang out with, what you prescribe to. You have to be careful.
Like your members, the members in extremist organizations. Is that what you're kind of talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And how they got there.
Right. Yeah. And I have to also think to myself that I'm not above that either. That if I wanted to be completely one-sided, I could definitely fall into that trap. I'm grateful that my undergrad was English, and in that was quite a bit of journalism. And as journalists, we were trained not to watch, like, to just fact check information, not to prescribe to just what one political party was saying, what one particular news station was saying, to really go and check the facts. And I cannot tell you how helpful that has been throughout my entire life, because it helps you to never have this one-sided idea of how things are. I don't have a problem looking at BBC, Al Jazeera, Fox News, ABC, MSC, all the alphabets, and looking at the news and the world from a variety of perspectives.
Yeah, well, you know, it's how you find things out, you know. So listen, are you doing social media? Do you do a website? Do you like readers to come and interact with you?
Oh, I love readers to come and interact with me. Yeah, I have a website. I have all the things. I have Instagram. I'm heavily involved in Instagram and on Twitter. I mean, X.
What's your website?
My website is real simple. It's just my name. It's Dr. is Dr. Catherine, Katherine, Hayes, Hayes, .com.
Well, fantastic. Okay, so now we're going to have that up as well as your book and everything so people can find it with one click. It'll be on our website. So that's amazing. Well, we appreciate you being here and talking about your new book and the world. So, and the new book is called A Fifth of the Story. Yeah. Our guest is the author of that, Dr. Catherine Hutchinson Hayes. Thank you for being here.
Yes, it's been my pleasure. It's been an honor. I respect everyone in this industry, all writers, all podcasters, radio interviewers. Oh, my goodness, it's lots of work. I run a podcast, and I know how much work you put into it.
Nice speaking with you.
Good speaking with you.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, all shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.